there's an old adage, or maybe it's fairly new. I think it's new, Jim, that basketball never stops, right? That was kind of a slogan for the Olympic times for basketball, and that's definitely the case for the Phoenix Suns. When you're not good, basketball never stops because the draft becomes the center of your world when your season ends, and then the summer league takes shape, and then training camp is right around the corner. Basketball is never stopping for the Suns, so therefore the podcast is going to keep rolling. Episode 30, Jim and I here on Bright Side of the Sun doing the Phoenix Suns podcast. Feeling good. It's scorching hot out here in Phoenix, and Jim, you're going to actually be out there in Vegas where it's equally as scorching, and hopefully the Suns can do some pretty fun things on the court to make your trip worth it. How are you doing, and how geared up and excited are you for actually getting out to Vegas and viewing some live summer league?
I'm a basketball junkie, and I will agree with your opossum, your little axiom to start off there, that basketball never stops. So I'm exactly the kind of basketball geek that will actually have fun doing something like that. So I'm glad that you allowed me to join you again, Chris, the inimitable Chris Havis. So this is Jim, his sidekick that is allowed to be blessed to be along with you on this journey through Suns podcasting for another week. I might be easily replaceable, Chris, but I'm really hard to get rid of.
That is about as truthful as it comes. And you know what? You're an amiable cohort. You're a right-wing assistant. You're great at all those things, and I appreciate you being on. I mean, you know what? We were able to replace you for one episode with PLR of the Sports Cave, but I think we're right back to where we need to be with Jim and Chris, JKing all around here with the Phoenix Suns podcast, which is kind of what the Suns did on the court a lot of the year last year. But it's getting better. You know, they're going into summer league this year. And, you know, here's an interesting thing that I was thinking about, Jim. The Suns last year with the summer league were able to, if you don't count the contracted lottery picks that they drafted, they were able to actually pull out a couple of players from summer league and say, here's some money. You're going to be on the Phoenix Suns next year. One of them, in PJ Tucker, took absolute advantage of that situation and became a permanent member of the Suns, it looks like. I mean, he's going to be back next year, started some this year. And, you know, if he continues to do what he's doing, really solid option there at the small forward, playing defense, rebounding the ball, and all that jazz that he's doing. But when you look at this current summer league roster, which might be 50% of the actual opening day roster when you look at it, which is a different story for another 30-minute podcast, but the Phoenix Suns, outside of players that are going to be contracted, are bringing in some interesting names. I'm not sure if any of these guys are going to actually be able to make the team based on, like, if you compare it to PJ Tucker and Deontay Garrett last year. When you kind of look at the summer league roster, I'm going to go over here in just a minute. I want to get your opinion on a guy who you think might PJ Tucker this summer league and actually make the roster. We have Thomas Abercrombie. He's coming in from Washington State / New Zealand. You have Chris Babb, who's from Iowa State, Deontay Garrett's stomping grounds. Deontay Garrett is on the roster as well. Deontay Christmas, as we continue with that theme, he spells it a little different, though. Coming out of Temple, he played with the Celtics a little bit last year. And Jake Cohen from Davidson, a big man. Archie Goodwin, Kendall Marshall, both Morris twins. PJ Tucker are all there as well. Second-round pick Alex Oriaki. And then out of Syracuse, big man Arinz Anoku. I'm probably butchering that name. I'm terrible with names, which doesn't make any sense covering the NBA draft, but because I say a lot of weird names every day. But looking at that group, other than contracted Phoenix Suns players, does anyone stand out at you and that you maybe enjoy during the draft process?
I don't have the level of expertise that you do with some of these more abstruse, less high-profile players. So why don't you educate me?
You know what? This is just like Jim. I'm Dr. King Schultz, and you're Django. That's just how this works. And if you guys have seen the movie, things don't end up very well for Dr. King Schultz. But I got to be Christopher Waltz, and you got to be Jamie Foxx. And this is our Django Unchained podcast, apparently. You keep leaning on me and wanting me to talk about these prospects. But I just playing with you there a little bit. Of the guys that are on the roster, honestly, I mean, Thomas Abercrombie was not really a player that on Washington State was really pushed out into the forefront. Chris Babb is a wing that can play. He's a big, stocky 2-3 that can play, but he played out of position a little bit over there at Iowa State. The guys that stand out to me are Jake Cohen of Davidson, 6'10", lean, athletic, active big man. you think Davidson, you think, you know, Steph Curry can shoot and a bunch of stiffs that are small school guys, but they've actually gotten really athletic since Steph Curry left there, and Jake Cohen's a pretty athletic five man. And then Deontay Christmas, it replicates a position that we have 50 players already, but, you know, as a point guard slash shooting guard, he can do a lot of things scoring the ball coming out of Temple. I like Deontay Christmas the most of all the non-contracted Suns, and to kind of maybe cheat a little bit, I like Alex Oriaki to hopefully make this roster. I know he was a second-round pick, but, I mean, he's just absolutely a tank. I mean, he's a beast. He anchored down a Connecticut championship a few years ago against Butler and, you know, switched over to Missouri, and they had kind of a disappointing season, but the guy is absolutely built like a tank. He's a guy that can push around NBA players at the four and the five, I would imagine, and he's just toughness. He's just an angry, hard six fouls and a guy that can rebound and do a little bit more than just foul. He's the guy I like the most, but they drafted him, so that's kind of cheating.
When I looked at his name the first time, the first thing I thought was Orokai, which I believe is one of the bad guys in one of those Lord of the Rings type of scenarios.
Okay.
I think that's what it is, the Orokai. So I guess if he's a big bruiser, then maybe that does fit that profile. I would, it's going to be hard. I think, like you're saying, the Suns already have about 30 guys on their roster. And out of those 30, they got at least maybe one or two that are actually real NBA players. But that being said, with the roster filled out the way it is, pending some movement to maybe dump some two-for-one deals, something like that, I agree with you. It is going to be, I think, really hard for any of these guys to crack the roster. I think with the rules they have in place, though, that we can maybe bring in at least a couple more guys for the practice heading into that for the preseason and stuff like that before they have to cut to the 15. Is that correct?
Yeah, they can have, I believe, a floating player as well, but that's kind of up to if you want to contract guys. So it's a little bit tough because, you know, does a general manager want to contract 3 to 4 guys who are never even going to suit up? So that's kind of the scenario the Suns are looking at is, hey, dude, they like a guy enough to basically put him in a suit for the season and have him as an injury risk type player.
Okay. But so if they find somebody they really like, if there's a PJ Tucker somewhere out there, a diamond in the rough, then, you know, maybe there's room for one guy on that. So I'll be able to keep an eye on these guys this weekend a little bit better. The Suns play on Saturday, so I'll make sure to keep a very keen eye on these so I can hopefully discern something, report back on some good stuff that I see there. But I'm really looking forward to that. It should be fun. I think Vegas is going to be a little bit cooler than here, so it shouldn't be quite as scorching. Hopefully there'll be some scorching action on the court down there. Maybe the Suns can, you know, win something in the summer league since they're not going to win anything during the regular season. And we got, 25 SB Nation NBA writers that are going to be all huddled there together in the house they rented, that type of stuff, at least a couple of them, those accommodations. And it should be a lot of fun to knock heads with some of them, hang out. Any excuse to go to Vegas isn't generally that bad of a thing, so I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, and the one thing that's standing out to me when I look at the Summer League roster is how Iowa State and Old Dominion University have dominated the Phoenix basketball scene. When you look across this, they got two players from Iowa State in Chris Babb and Deontay Garrett, their head coach in Jeff Hornacek, and their head athletic trainer, Aaron Nelson, all from Iowa State University. I almost said Ohio. The Iowa State University. And then Mark West, as well as Kenny Gatson, both Old Dominion graduates, Old Dominion former players that are on the coaching staff. So it's quasi-interesting that a lot of duplication there. Question for you, Jim, when you look at this and you see the players that of the seven guys that are going to potentially be contracted Phoenix Suns, excluding them, if you're an NBA agent and you're getting your guy who is undrafted or your guy that, you know, maybe didn't make the league last year or the year before, you got this guy, you got an asset, a young quality player, are you allowing them to come and play on the Phoenix Suns Summer League when you see seven potentially contracted NBA players that are going to be on there? And the team's actual head coach coaching, where he's probably going to want to get a look at his actual players. Do you see NBA agents probably holding back, and that probably leads to why there's not as much other talent or as much interesting talent on this roster?
Not only the players that you have there, and like you were referencing, alluding to the opportunity for new coach Hornacek to get his eyes on some of these guys and figure out a little bit with them, some actual court time there. But also what we just spoke about with the roster size, the Suns have a big, fat, bloated, distended roster at this point. And so, just like we were saying, I don't know if there's much of an opportunity to add a guy like this. I don't know if you're going to have a situation where you're going to bring in a Tucker and a Garrett. So the chances, I think, of these guys cracking the roster are probably fairly minuscule, and it would seem like there's probably other teams around the league that would be a better situation, more conducive to actually maybe seeing some court time or at least making a roster for an NBA team.
Yeah, and as you kind of bring up there, and I like that you talked about how kind of loaded the roster is, and that's an extremely loaded phrase there, because when I say loaded, I don't mean that they're loaded with talent. I mean they're loaded with players. They have bodies. They have a lot of their positions are filled up with just players that they've been signed and, you know, don't have contracts that are ending up right now with Marcin Gortat and Goran Dragic and Channing Frye, Michael Beasley, Luis Scola, Shannon Brown, Morris Twins, Kendall, P.J. Tucker, Malcolm Lee. You know, if they bring back Deontay Garrett, you have your two rookies in Goodwin and Len. I just rattled off, I think, 150 names. I don't know if you can have that many players on a roster. But when you look at that, they have a loaded roster. They have very few players that you can actually call assets. I know a lot of people have this narrative in their head that Marcin Gortat is worth a lottery pick. You got to watch a lot more basketball, guys. He was definitely not worth a lottery pick last year, let alone a first-round pick with the way he played and obviously with injury concerns. Now that he's an expiring contract, now that Luis Scola is actually tradable, and he's a much older player, so he's not going to bring as much value, but those two guys are actually, you would think, have a little more value this coming season. Gortat as an expiring deal, very quality, substantial center. Luis Scola, 2 years left on his contract, but only makes 4.5 a year, and he's a veteran influence and, you know, a quality guy to have as your maybe third or fourth big off the bench. Where do you see their value? Like, how do you, when you look at those players, without overvaluing your own guys, what value do those two have in your eyes on the NBA market?
Well, the way I like to look at value is that something is worth what you can get for it. It doesn't matter what I think it's worth if I can't get that for it. If I have something like a house and I think it's worth $350,000 and I'm looking to sell it. I need to sell this house and I think it's worth $350,000, but the best offer I'm getting is $275,000. It's not worth $350,000 because I can't get that for it. And so in terms of where value lies for Gortat, for instance, he has value as an average-ish starting center, maybe slightly below average, somewhere in there. Depending on the situation and the people surrounding him, he might be able to return to some of the better numbers and be middle of the pack, maybe slightly above. But the only places that you would see him going would be to playoff teams or teams that are really making a push to make the playoffs. And there are only a couple of those teams that don't have a comparable or better player already in place. So you think, well, a starting NBA center should have some value. Well, not if nobody wants him, needs him. So the value is based on the market and the demand, and there's not really much demand for a player like Gortat. There are a few teams, but like you're saying, with that in mind, if they could find some way to make some salaries work and just maybe take on an expiring and get a late first for him and have that work somehow, somewhere, then I'd be happy with that. I think that not only do you get maybe that late first, if you could pull that, and then you have the contract that would expire just like Gortat's, and you can take, you know, any garbage player X. But what you also get out of that is maybe you take off the 2 to 3 wins Gortat gets you, and that moves you up from, say, 6 to 3 in the draft. So you actually just traded like the 6th for the 3rd pick by moving Gortat and making your team just a little bit worse.
Yeah, and some of the things that, the reason I like to ask that, and Brightsiders, I love you, stay active in the chat boards, but go into the trade machine, and I wish the trade machine had a logic button to hit so that way I can like scream at people with some of these trades that you see. And you know, at one point I was doing the same thing. I was on chat boards and making trades, but then you kind of start looking at the intricacies of the NBA. And like, for example, you know, some trades that our fellow listeners and readers, you know, maybe trading Goran Dragic and Kendall Marshall for like Aaron Aflalo and like Tobias Harris or Mo Harkless. Well, Tobias Harris and Mo Harkless over the second half of the season where Orlando was losing every game, I understand that, were extremely valuable. Were guys that were putting up, whether it be 14 and 5, when you look at Mo Harkless, as well as almost two combined steals blocks. And in a guy like Tobias Harris, who was putting up very near double-double numbers playing at the four. So you got to understand the value of these guys. Like Marcin Gortat is not going to go on the market and fetch you Tristan Thompson, a 21-year-old, long, athletic, per 36, double-double type guy. So you got to understand the inherent value. Like we value our guys because they're our guys. But Marcin Gortat was arguably some of the worst basketball of his career over the last, you know, 40, 50 games of the year before he went down to injury. So the first 15 games of the year, he was worth a lottery pick straight up. After that, I don't know what happened. It was a mental switch. It was fatigue from playing in Poland, but that combined with the fact that he's coming off of an injury, he's not going to net Dion Waiters and Sergei Karasev or Tristan Thompson and Sergei Karasev. Marcin Gortat is not going to get that much value. So when you look at like a Luis Scola, if you can fetch a second round pick and maybe steal a young asset from a team, that's realistic. And with Marcin Gortat, if he can get on the court and prove that he's the old Marcin Gortat, maybe he can get a late first rounder and an asset, or maybe a slightly better asset and a second round pick. So, I mean, obviously, kind of speaking vaguely and in broad strokes because we don't have actual teams to look at. But that's what we need to consider, is that we might be overvaluing our assets. Those two guys are not going to go out there and fetch a lottery pick. Like a lot of people were under the assumption because of the fake rumors that Marcin Gortat was absolutely going to be worth number 10 from Portland. Well, they got CJ McCollum, who was being talked about as going number 5 to Phoenix. So, you know, they're not going to trade Marcin Gortat for CJ McCollum. Long term, what's the better asset? What's the better value? You can kind of answer that yourself. Very, very much a rhetorical question there. Jim, do you kind of on the same page there in terms of how the assets line up?
Absolutely. With Gortat, with that, there is some talk about, oh, the Suns can be patient, bide their time, and then that way when a team gets more desperate, when that comes in, then maybe he's more attractive. And I guess it's still possible a team could have a big go down at the trade deadline and then Gortat looks good. But I just don't really see the value there with the way things move and the dynamic nature of the league. That's where you just used as an example with Portland and how they took McCollum and got that. Well, they turned around and brought in Robin Lopez. And I'm sure they're looking at it as, well, Robin Lopez is just as good as Gortat. That's not at least any kind of significant difference between Gortat and Robin Lopez to where they think that they're taking a big hit because they missed out on Marcin. So, yeah, with both of those, and Luis Scola, I think, actually needs to have a specific kind of fit. He doesn't run well. He doesn't defend well. So that's going to take him out a lot of teams where they're not going to see him as that useful. Like you take a Grizzlies team that plays more than a half-court set, and it's like, well, maybe he could work out there with like his 18-foot jumper, but then it's like, well, no, the Grizzlies play defense, and Scola doesn't, so that's a horrible fit. So it's hard finding places for these guys. It's a lot easier to move young talent, young prospects. You can flip those really easy. Daryl Morey's shown us the blueprint for that, how you can just shuffle those guys around and wheel and deal. But these older guys, it's not so easy to do. Luis Scola's got 2 years left. Maybe if he was an expiring, he'd be more attractive. His contract's not huge, but $4.5 million isn't really that great of a deal for this guy at this stage of his career with the extra year. So Scola, same thing. If they could get a second round pick and clear a little bit of cap room, I'd really love if they could clear a little bit of cap room. They're right at the cap, and if they could, you know, sink closer to the $6 million, they'll be allowed to be under it, so they can go to that 90% floor, that 90% of the cap. Then with either Gortat or Scola moving them, that's what I'd hope. So for me, I'd jump on either one of those a late first and an expiring and a little bit of cap relief maybe for Gortat and a second rounder and some cap relief for Scola, some, you know, a garbage player or whatever.
Yeah, and when you look at, like, just real quick comparing, I don't want to go onto a rant about these two specific players, but since you brought it up, when you look at a guy like Martin Gortat, who's 29 years old, going to turn 30, you know, by midway through next season or a little bit longer down the road, he's a 29-year-old guy who's played a lot of international basketball. His per 36 numbers are good. He averages 13.9, 11.1, very good for a center. And then you look at Robin Lopez, who puts up 15 and 8 per 36, but he's also had some seasons where he actually played, you know, a lot less minutes, a lot less opportunities, a little bit different scenario with the Phoenix Suns. So these two guys, I mean, you just put a blank canvas out there and you don't put names or silhouettes because, you know, Robin Lopez's silhouette is very identifiable. These guys aren't terribly far off. I mean, Gortat's a better rebounder based on his overall numbers, but he also really never played with anybody else that can scoop up rebounds. Like, Robin actually played with some guys that can rebound the ball. Those two guys, I mean, you look at Portland, they get CJ McCollum at 10, they get Robin Lopez, and they go, you know, they just dust their hands off and go, I think that's better than just Martin Gortat all by itself. So when you look at that, we're talking about moves here, and Portland, I'm glad we kind of talked about them a little bit. They were a start, they were a bench away from being a playoff team last year. Their starting lineup, I still think to this day, was comparable to like how good Miami's starting lineup is or San Antonio. Their starting lineup is absolutely fantastic from top to bottom. But then when their bench would come in, completely squander leads. They had the worst bench in NBA history for most of the season. Then they started getting a little bit better as the season was going on because they were probably looking at the numbers. They went out there, they draft pretty well, I think, with CJ McCollum and Alan Crabb and acquiring guys like Jeff Withey and then going out there in free agency and getting Robin Lopez and a few other names. When you start looking at the teams, especially, in my opinion, New Orleans, Sacramento, and Portland, I think those three teams did a great job of separating themselves from the floor of the West to the middle of the West. Maybe not playoff, but at least to that middle pack of the West. When you look at that, when you rank the West at the bottom, is there any chance the Suns can pull themselves off of the floor this next season comparatively to how well these other teams did during the offseason acquiring more talent?
It's going to be hard. You'll still have to see how a couple things work out. What's interesting is that people kind of lauded the Suns' offseason moves, but using your draft picks that you already had isn't necessarily a move. I guess you could have sold them for cash, like the Suns used to do back in the day, but that's not really a move. Obviously, they had the Bledsoe trade, but I'm not of the opinion that Bledsoe in and Dudley out is going to net any more wins. I don't see that as really an upgrade. You take away one of the most efficient scorers at his position in the league, a guy like Dudley that doesn't make mistakes, doesn't hurt the team, does things right, and you bring in a guy like Bledsoe, who knows what we're going to get. It's a wild card situation, but at the best case scenario for me is that he might play slightly better than Jared. Jared's not a bad player. It's not like we traded away some garbage player and got an all-star. The trade, I don't think, probably nets any wins there. With some of the other teams, like the Pelicans, for instance, which you were going off about their name earlier. They've made some significant moves. They bring in guys like Drew Holiday, Tyreek Evans. That's a lot of talent coming in. That's an all-star, and Tyreek Evans, a player that some of the people on our site I've heard don't really like as a player, but his numbers project that he's better than Bledsoe at the same age, so I wouldn't want to have him for 4 years and $44 million if I think that's what he got. But you see some stuff like that. Sacramento has made some interesting moves, bringing in Carl Landry through the trade. They got Vasquez. Those are decent players. Vasquez is a very serviceable point guard. I would consider him very comparable to Goran. He's a very good facilitator, I think. Was he second in the league in assists last year? Is that right?
Something like that. Yeah, he had jumped up. I don't think he won Most Improved Player of the Year, and we'll check that right now, but he definitely was, in my opinion. But yeah, I think he was in the top five, at least, in assists last year.
Yeah, So if Minnesota's healthy, they add Kevin Martin, get some more shooting from outside. Just getting the players back that they were without last year makes them better. Portland, I think, obviously, is going to be better. Sacramento, like I said, they have some things that they've done. Looking at it, I don't really see a team that the Suns right now that I would bet any money that they're going to leapfrog. I think that we're still looking at the worst team in the league, or the West, I should say.
Yeah, let's not get started on other teams that begin with a PH when we're talking about Philadelphia. That's an interesting team. Yeah, Gravis Vasquez finished 9.0 assists per game, which was a full assist more than Drew Holiday, the guy that's replacing him. But again, different scenarios. But he finished at 9.0 assists a game, third in the league behind Rajon Rondo and Chris Paul. But both those guys actually missed time. So when you consider it from like a guy who actually played the full season, he was a guy who was the assist king because he played the entire season. When you look at that, I mean, the Sacramento Kings, I think the underrated thing that they did was bringing in Carl Landry. So you look at bringing in Carl Landry to play with DeMarcus Cousins, and, you know, you trade off Tyreke Evans, but you drafted Ben McLemore. They just brought in Luke Ricard, Mba Mute, and have fun with that name as much as you want. He's one of my favorite college players during the time when he was with UCLA, and he comes in as just another glue guy. And I think they're doing a good job of actually constructing a basketball roster over there. You know, Gravis Vasquez comes in that does things that the scorers don't do, and Mba Mute and Carl Landry. So I'm not saying that, you know, sign them up for the playoffs today, they're going to make it. But young new coach, young new general manager, all very similar things that you say about the Phoenix Suns. But the Kings just happen to have some better talent to where they can go out there and acquire certain players and then go out there and make their team better from that perspective. And I think the Kings, you know, they have a puncher's chance to be in that race for the eighth seed. I think that they'll just miss out on it. But definitely those three teams, when you look at Portland, New Orleans, and Sacramento, all three of them significantly got better, where Utah, the Los Angeles Laker version of Los Angeles, and the Dallas Mavericks, I think those three teams actually took significant leaps back considering where they were last year. Are they any competition for the Phoenix Suns as the worst team in the West, in your opinion?
Yeah, I don't know what the hell they're doing in Dallas. That was one, when I was looking at some of the teams on the bottom that looked like they might be moving up, I didn't throw Dallas really into the conversation of teams that have really moved down. They cleared up a bunch of cap space and then ended up being the ugly girl on the other side of the dance floor that none of the guys would have to dance because they just didn't seem that attractive. So they got left there standing, holding their sweaty piles of cash and not having anyone that wanted to come to Dallas and take it. And that's a tough situation even with that, because they've still got Dirk getting paid like $23 million, eating up like 40% of their cap. And I don't see how you're really going to attract players to come play with a 36, 37-year-old. I think he's 37-year-old Nowitzki. It's kind of like the same situation where earlier in his career, lots of people would want to play with Kobe. And now with the other stuff besides just the basketball talent, with the basketball talent eroding, him getting better, all this stuff, then he's not really that attractive for people to want to come play with. Like, you know, you can get away with being a little bit of a jerk or a lot of bit of a jerk when you got that overwhelming talent, but once that starts to dissipate, people aren't going to put up with your crap anymore. So, yeah, I could see Dallas being a team that would compete with the Suns, because where things are coming undone for them, I could definitely see them just pull screw it, let's lose as many games as possible and get as high of a pick as possible to get one of these elite guys at in the 2014 draft. So they could potentially fight with the Suns. The Lakers, I'm sure, still have enough to where they might not make the playoffs, but they're not going to win 25 games or anything like that. So maybe I'd throw the Mavs in the mix. They can compete with the Suns. They can battle it out, deathmatch for that 15th spot.
Yeah, I mean, the more and more I look at this roster, they have a team that might be, I mean, Devin Harris and Shane Larkin at the point, Vince Carter and Ricky Lito. I just mentioned two rookies in the first four names, by the way. One a second rounder. And then you continue going up and down the roster. I mean, Sean Marion and Jay Crowder as the depth there, and Dirk Nowitzki and Bernard James. I mean, they don't have anybody. They have nobody on their roster. I mean, obviously they can fill it out because they got the cap space to go just, you know, grab bodies and say, hey, come play basketball. But that's a really bad team. And I think Rick Carlisle might go all man on the moon on us in terms of just completely losing it this year, because he's one of the best coaches in the league. I mean, in my opinion, can probably do more with less than anybody in the entire scope of the NBA in terms of coaching, teaching, motivating. And he's going to be given probably the most paltry roster he's ever had, which ironically also has a superstar in Dirk Nowitzki, but it's a very paltry roster. I think they can compete. I mean, it all depends on how they round out the roster. If they decide to go, hey, we obviously didn't get a free agent. You know, we don't want to be at the bottom of the West, so we're going to go out there and sign whatever top priority guys are left and try and scrounge up 30 wins, which I think would be a mistake. I mean, sure, Dirk's at the end of his career, but he's also at the end of his contract. So do you try and compete for Dirk, or do you try and compete for your future? So Phoenix Suns podcast deviating into the Dallas Maverick territory, but that's a really interesting situation. I think that's the only team really that you can like with a straight face say they're going to compete with the Phoenix Suns at the bottom of the West. I really like what Sacramento did, New Orleans and Portland. I think people are jumping on this tanking thing from Utah from just all crazy angles. I mean, they still have Enes Kanter and Derek Favors that are going to now slide into starting roles as they lose Millsap and Jefferson, but they did that consciously because they have Enes Kanter and Derek Favors, and they brought in some guys to back them up. So I don't think Utah's tanking, but I do think that they're going to let their youth go out there and play basketball. They got 5 lottery picks that are going to be probably starting when the season begins, 5 lottery picks from the past 5 drafts, and they're going to throw them out there and say, hey, show us what you got. You know, we drafted you guys for a reason. We're going to run with the guys that we have, and most of them are experienced at this point outside of Trey Burke. So they got a lot of guys that they're going to throw out there and see what the youth can do for them. Not even looking at the East, I do think that the Phoenix Suns are absolutely going to end up being in the race for the bottom of the West. And, you know, out East, there might be a team or two that'll compete with them. But if you're in the bottom 5 of the 2014 draft, you're an excited fan because it's not just the race for Wiggins. I mean, there's legitimately a couple of other perennial all-stars that are going to be drafted in this upcoming draft. So that's, yeah, I mean, looking at the scope of the West, I think we're in agreement. I think the teams that you think got better, I also think got better. We're not even going to look at the top of the West, because that's got to be disheartening for Suns fans to start looking at how good some of those teams are going to be at the top of the West.
We did forget to touch on what could potentially be the Suns' biggest, most talented acquisition of the summer, though that's if Channing Frye comes back.
True.
Healthy. That he, I would say that based off of where he left off, that he might be the second best player on the team behind Goran. So with his ability to stretch the court and help with that mismatch freight space, all that, that if he was healthy, I'd actually take a year of him over a year of Gortat. So that could maybe be interesting to where that might push them up, just to nudge them up a little bit. But yeah, there's definitely been some teams at the top of the West that have won free agency. The rich got richer. Most of the playoff teams improved, made good moves. Houston, Golden State, the Clippers, these teams all improved significantly. So there should be a lot of really fun basketball. There could be 5-6 teams all battling out between 50 and 60 wins that are all real competitive with each other in the West. So should give us something interesting to watch come playoff time again next year while we're waiting for the lottery selection show.
Yeah. I mean, in comparison, you talk about getting better, just using this as just a quick line of advanced stats. When you look at Jared Dudley last year was 4.8 on the win share toll. And that was, you know, as a starter / backup. And as a guy that had to share minutes at the point guard position, Eric Bledsoe, as he's going to have to do this year with Goran Dragic, he was 3.7 win shares. So right there all by itself, they drop a win all by themselves without even trying. They drop one full win. And Channing Frye over the past 2 years has been worth 4.2 wins per season on the win share, pretty, you know, split even on offense and defense. So it's not like it's all offense. He actually makes an impact on the defensive end. So, you know, if he comes in and he's worth, you know, about 4 wins, but subtracting everything that left, I think that this team's on par to be fairly similar to what they were last year, maybe a touch worse in terms of wins, losses. But yeah, I would actually challenge your notion of Channing Frye being in line to be the second best player if he comes back fully healthy. I think he has a chance to be the best player on the roster. And, you know, if he can create a little bit from the perimeter off the bounce, he might be their quote-unquote go-to guy and potentially their leading scorer next year with the way things are lining up.
Yeah, he could definitely be the ICMF again. So I look forward to it. If nothing else, it'll be fun to see him back on the court again. He was one of my favorite players on the Suns. I guess he's one of the last remnants of a more halcyon time back in the far distant memory of when the Suns were very competitive and a whole lot of fun to watch.
Yeah, yeah. So let's leave on this, Jim. We've, I think, covered a lot of stuff, and we're going to keep coming at the podcast, by the way. Jim will be reporting from Summer League next week for us, and then Dave will actually be out there reporting from Summer League the following week after that during the quote-unquote playoffs. So the thing you're looking forward to the most, other than watching Phoenix Suns Summer League in Las Vegas, is?
Not getting a tattoo of Channing Frye on my face after the love fest we just had for him.
You know what? If we're going to go all hangover metaphors, wouldn't it technically be a tattoo of the Shaquille O'Neal shoe logo? That would fit beautifully around the eye socket, a la the Mike Tyson tattoo. I think that needs to happen, Jim. You need to come back from Vegas with a Shaquille O'Neal shoe logo tattooed on the side of your face.
That actually might happen. What happens in Vegas doesn't always stay in Vegas. And with all those other NBA writers there, who knows what might get slipped into my drink.
Well, for the Phoenix Suns, what happens in Vegas will all collectively come back to Phoenix. The head coach, the assistant coaches, the trainer, and seven of those players. This is the Phoenix Suns podcast, episode 30. Thanks for listening. We'll be back next week and with more Phoenix Suns content covering the Summer League. Thanks for listening, guys.
Don't forget that Summer League championship, Chris. They're coming back with that, too.